Hello and welcome to Repertory Screenings, episode 100, A Century of Excellence. I'm your host, Em. With me is my regular co-host, Jackson.
I'm so old, I've been podcasting for 100 years.
And Destiny.
100 years of black excellence.
I can't make any claim to black excellence.
Me and Em just sitting there nodding like, that's so true.
I support you over here from my white seat. Just nodding along, yes, black excellence.
There's nothing you can do to help my cause.
No, nothing. One of the best scenes of the movie. Anyway, we're here. Jackson, you still sound a little sick.
I am sounding
better, and you've backslid a little bit.
I've just been sick for a few, like, since last week.
I know, but 2 days ago you sounded much better than you sound today.
It's more like it's been up and down. I would not say I've backslid necessarily, okay. But I've been up and down.
I'm just letting the audience know that's why you sound bad.
Yes, thank you. But I've been sick, and I got sick like real bad in December, and then this time is not as bad, but I still feel the after effects. Hey, you know what? Hey, it's bad out there, guys. If you know, getting sick sucks these days. So I don't actually know what it was or what's wrong, but I'm sick. I'll be doing my best.
So, what'd you watch?
Nothing. I watched Malcolm X. Okay. It's a fucking fantastic movie. I'm excited to talk about it.
Well, you're going to have to wait another 20 minutes. Destiny, what'd you watch?
I watched two movies. I watched 1987's Dolls, directed by Stuart Gordon. This movie was very good. It was about these two witches that... Let me start over. It's about these this horribly dysfunctional family that has a car breakdown in front of this creepy old house that two witches live in, and some other house guests end up showing up for the same reason, essentially. And they have a house full of dolls because one of the guys is a doll maker, and the witches are a couple. And hijinks ensue when turns out the dolls are alive. And it's a charming 80s movie about killer dolls. Like, what's there to hate?
A lot, apparently. I've complained about this on Around the Long Fire, which you can find on the Newer Mapping Network, before. But this movie has like a 3 stars on Letterboxd, and I was like, what's wrong with people? This is a fantastic film. It's just funny. All the kills are delightful. All the doll special effects are good. Root for the heroes. You're really rooting for the people to get killed. Everything you could ask for.
It's true. And there's a great, like, child actor. Yeah. I love a good child actor.
Yeah. I watched this, we watched this together, and it was a great time.
It was so fun. Made me want to revisit Reanimator, because I famously did not like Reanimator, and I need to revisit.
We can do that whenever you want. I'm happy to watch Reanimator with you.
Okay, cool. The other movie I watched, a more recent film, 2024's Lisa Frankenstein, directed by Zelda Williams. This movie was hilarious. I guess I can go over the plot. If you don't know what it's about, this young goth girl who is sort of ostracized in school, and she's like got this shitty stepmom, and the only really supportive person in her life is her stepsister. But anyway, who's like real preppy, and it's set in the 80s, and she somehow has like the power to... I don't know how to explain it, but she brings a guy from, like, a dead guy back to life, a Victorian dead guy, played by Cole Sprouse, who just grunts through the whole movie, no dialogue, and they kind of, she's just Dr. Frankenstein to him, and he's her monster, and they have a lot of kills, and a lot of laughs, and a lot of good times, and it's very sweet, and a lot of great needle drops, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And those are my two movies.
All right. I also watched Dolls of Destiny. That was very good. I watched Maestro, which is a 2003 documentary about underground music scene of the 80s.
You have to be clear about that, considering everyone is posting about Maestro, the other movie.
Yeah, no, no. This is a documentary by Gisele Ramos about, you know, underground music and the club scene and everyone learning how to, like, DJs and raves and dance music. And then everyone died of AIDS. One of those documentary. It's like, oh, yeah, everyone fucking died except for the people we interviewed, which is a bummer. It was good. I don't have any. What do you react to a documentary about a time and a place? Right. I don't have deep thoughts about it, but it was good. I watched two Brazilian films called The End of Man and When the Gods Fall Asleep from Jose Mojica Marins, who has a whole collection on Arrow. He did the Coffin Joe movies. Those are the ones that they're like pushing. They have a big box set. I want to ask
Jackson a question.
Yeah, sure.
So when you hear the words Coffin Joe, what genre do you think the movie is?
I don't know.
Like when I say to you, I watched Coffin Joe. Just give me a genre. What do you associate?
Like a comedy western. I don't know.
Okay.
I said spaghetti western. Apparently they're just straight up like horror movies, like slasher films, which I wouldn't have guessed. Anyway.
The word coffin's in it, though. So I feel silly thinking it's a western.
What? Django. I think of Django.
same.
I don't know. I think that's totally normal. These two are not any of that stuff, but are a... The End of Man is the first movie, and then the When the Gods Fall Asleep is a sequel about a guy who just shows up in modern-day Brazil. He, like, emerges out of the surf, and he's naked, and everyone, like, it's like, oh, look at that man. And some rich lady gives him a bunch of spare clothes. They're, like, a turban and, like, a bunch of, like, weird blouses and stuff, so he looks very fancy. And he goes around... professing wisdom to people, as people start to like build up this like cult following around him, even though he's just kind of walking around saying things to people and reacting to them. This is a movie from the early 70s, if you've not garnered that just from the description. But it's about the ways in which like it's like light social commentary. I guess it is just straight up social commentary, but it's kind of light in that it's mostly these scenarios of this guy shows up and people are being ridiculous. Then he points out their hypocrisy, but it doesn't change anything because that's, you know, you can't change the way people act. And he moves on to another scene and does this again. As it builds into, he becomes like a national incident as he decides he's going to leave everyone and disappears. At the end of the first movie, he goes back to where he came from, which turns out is a mental institution. Because he's just a crazy guy. And then the second movie does it again, but it's worse. The second movie sucks. The first movie's interesting enough. I quite enjoyed it for what it was. But I would not recommend the second movie at all. Second movie is just too exploitation-y, tawdry. They're on Arrow if you want to watch them. You just want to watch like 70, back when people thought that you could fix anything. People made movies about that. Yeah. Yeah. What else do I want to talk about that I've seen? I watched Blade Runner 2049. That's probably the big one. The Denis Villeneuve movie, the sequel to Blade Runner.
Do you now see what I'm talking about with the text being too small?
It was totally fine for me, but I understand why you thought that.
I've got my 50-inch 4K screen here. I can read the text just fine.
55
inches. Hate small text.
55-inch. Yes, mine's a 39
inch. The all of the text on the screen is extremely built for a 4K display. I imagine watching that in like fucking potato quality does not do it any favors. Anyway, Blade Runner 2049 is like a mostly beautiful movie. In terms of its like set design and visual aesthetics, not the way it sounds because the soundtrack's fucking terrible, but manages to miss the point entirely of why Blade Runner's good, and was kind of a bummer. I like really like the first half. It's about Kay, who's played by Ryan Gosling, who's a replicant who is a Blade Runner, and there's no like question that he's a replicant. He's, you know, the world has become much more stratified. All the replicants are not secret. They're all like, you know, everyone knows who a replicant is, and they're all like organized and labeled as such. And the world is definitely like more locked down what it is to be human versus what it is to be a replicant. And he goes and hunts down rogue replicants like from the olden days that are still around, and deals with people being super racist to him because they're humans for an hour as he starts to realize maybe he is a person, maybe the robots are people, but doesn't quite know what to do with any of that. And then the answer turns out, go visit Harrison Ford and ruin the movie.
yeah, it does turn out to be the answer.
I remember liking Arrival, but finding it kind of stupid. And I can't believe that Denis Villeneuve made another big sci-fi movie that boils down to the thing that defines people is being parents, because that's what both Arrival and Blade Runner are about like the sacredness of parenthood as like a driving force in humanity's lives. And I was like, Blade Runner isn't about this. Blade Runner is about feeling ill, about living in a world where like there's so much stuff, but none of it means anything.
Yeah, the like societal, just like malaise of living in the hell of LA and Blade Runner is not really what 2049 does well. Like, it's got some.
It does
the stuff.
A little bit. Like, there's a little bit where he comes home and he's got his fucking holographic wife, and it's sad. But then it turns out she's like become a real person too, and it's actually good. And she's like the thing that uplifts him, even though it's not. It's fake. It's all fucking fake. Why is she the one holographic girl who turns out to be a real person? But it's not. Nothing's. It's just like it can't commit to like the tone of what Blade Runner is supposed to be about. Blade Runner's bleak.
Oh, you finish your point first.
No, it's just like the Blade Runner as a tone piece is like about casting about for meaning in a world where like meaning is not sellable, so no one's doing it anymore. It's out of fashion, and how alienating that is. And Blade Runner 2049 is like, well, the things that you buy are just generate your meaning for you. Don't worry about it. You have a kid and you live in a house and you got a holographic wife and that's your meaning. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, I remember finding the stuff with Joy really frustrating when I watched it, because first of all, she's called Joy, which knock it off. Second of all, it can't actually pivot to the way the movie would need to pivot, which is everyone is buying sentient women as slaves, right? Because that's the only, like, if you're gonna make her a real person the way that Kay's a real person, say it's all real people all the way down, then you have, like, the movie has to change radically. But they don't, like, it just walks up to the line, kind of. It just kind of becomes about her and their personal relationship rather than blowing open the whole world, because it would just be too much for the film to tackle. And so they're just like ideas layered on top where you just can't actually go all the way in tackling them.
Yeah. Apparently this was, I think the movie has a very dim, like, view of women in film, and apparently I missed I was not paying attention to the movie that came out. I was not watching movies that much in 2017 that were new, but there is a whole I found reams of discussion about whether the movie is misogynist or not, and Mackenzie Davis is like, no, it's about the way female roles are commodified and violence is enacted upon them and controlled by men. And I was like, I guess, but on that level, like, I feel like this is like dumber than Neon Demon, which is already bad about that. And I think the two movies are like really aligned in terms of what they're about.
I don't know if I'd go dumber than Neon Demon's pretty fucking dumb.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that...
But Blade Runner literally has... 2049 literally has Kay, his holographic girlfriend, who's not real, overlay herself with Mackenzie Davis, who's a real, like, replicant sex worker, to be able to touch him, because that's what gives their relationship meaning, is if she's embodied in, like, a sexual surrogate. And then she treats her like shit at the end of the day after. The two women just start like bickering at each other. And it's like, what are you trying to say with any of this? I thought it was like brain dead. I thought it was so stupid and awful.
Yeah. I mean, that dichotomy is funny to me, because some of the most misogynistic movies I've ever seen are about the ways in which women are commodified.
Yes.
Like, you can do two things at once.
I think the set design special effects are great on that's the thing that I was like, because if everything feels like miniatures in a way that was really surprising to me. Like, the world feels like miniatures and matte paintings. I assume none of it was, but it really looks like they're trying really hard to get to that in terms of aesthetics. And I thought that was nice. But like I said, I liked the first hour and then it all fell apart and I was really bummed about it.
Yep.
Quick other things I watched. I watched a short film called America, which I'll probably reference a little bit when we talk about Malcolm X, which is one of the Black History Month things on Criterion Collection, which was a short film about like the idea if there was like Black Hollywood through time that was like a real ongoing thing. I thought it was like okay. It was a little like, you know how sometimes You know the bit in Gilmore Girls where Kurt makes the art film and it's just black and white, like Dutch angles, and you're like, what is the, like, it's just like a cartoon of art movies. Yeah. This was kind of that sometimes.
Oh.
but about like what if there were 1930s films that starred black people, even though there were, but you know, like ones that people like actually watched and remembered. And I thought it was like kind of mid, but I do want to talk about it a little bit when we talk about, because I think Malcolm X is doing this exact same thing, but way better, because Spike Lee's a fantastic, one of the best working directors in the world.
Yeah.
I watched Eyes of Fire, which is a 1983 folk horror movie, which is about a bunch of pilgrims. I guess pilgrims is the wrong word, but they're like, you know, it's pilgrimly days back during the witch times, and this small splinter group who is driven by this guy who claims he's like creating a splinter religion, but mostly wants to sleep with everybody's wives, breaks off and travels in the wilds, but run afoul of Native Americans and maybe like a curse of Native Americans on the land. It's really corny and bad on that front. And I have nothing else to say about it other than I watched it. And I thought people need to not do haunted native magic spaces in their films. It's always cringe. And then I watched To Joy, which is a Bergman movie. It's one of his like early melodramas, which I rather liked. It's just about this couple who both work in a symphony, and he's a mope and she's like vivacious, and they get married because he's the one who actually asks her, because like all the other guys like, yeah, I dated her, but I wasn't going to marry her. She's like too free spirited. And he was the one who asked, even though they're not suited to each other, because he's a fucking, like I said, he's a mope. He wants her to stay home and be the mother while he goes and becomes a famous soloist, even though he's not good enough to be a soloist. And their relationship is strained the rest of their lives because of this. You know, straightforward melodrama stuff. It was pretty good. And then I watched Ebira, Horror of the Deep, which is a Godzilla movie, which I realized 15 minutes in I'd already seen before, but I watched it again. I was like, I'm already committed. I just went to my Godzilla collection. I was like, I think this is where I stopped. And it turns out I stopped at Ebira, not the one before Ebira. And Ebira itself is a big giant lobster monster, which is barely in the movie because a giant lobster costume is very hard to move in and articulate. So it's mostly about Godzilla and Mothra. And as always, for one of these 8,000 grass skirt natives on an island chanting to Mothra and being racist. This is the kaiju movies love to spend half their movie with a bunch of like island natives and their backwards religion worshiping Mothra.
But it comes through in the end, you see. Mothra listens.
Yeah. It always does. Yeah, absolutely. Every time.
You gotta believe.
Maybe
gotta
they're
believe.
More in touch with nature than us. Who can say? Anyway, we'll come back in another year to relitigate Japanese colonialism with a big monster.
Yeah, yeah. And that was everything. Trying to go on too long. Blade Runner really annoyed me. I was having a good time, and then it really, like, the back half just fucking let me down, and I've gotten more mad about it as time went on.
It's so much worse than a movie just being bad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, though, I Googled it for you. They just made some miniatures. Check it out. Miniatures.
Cool.
Oh, sick. Yeah, no, it comes across, because I was like, man, these look like models.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm glad they just did it. Because obviously there's a lot of CGI in that movie, but yes, there was a bunch of miniature work.
Specifically the big landscapes and stuff. I'm like, man, like when they're like driving past the giant pyramids and city blocks and everything, I'm like, this looks really good. I don't expect movies to look good anymore.
It really is like that.
Yeah. But that's it. I was heavily movie moded because I knew I was about to go play Final Fantasy for a month, and now I'm doing that. So expect next time for me to have almost no movies, would be my guess.
You'll have a couple. You'll be done before. We've still got 2 weeks to record the next one.
So, yeah, that's true.
But we'll see.
I'm going really fast with Final Fantasy, so there's that. All right, let's get to our movie club.
Yeah.
Our movie this week is Malcolm X, the 1992 film directed by Spike Lee, written by Arnold Pearl and Spike Lee, based on the autobiography of Malcolm X by Alex Haley and Malcolm X. I said this came out in 92. Jackson, what's this about?
Hey, you know Malcolm X? It's a biopic about his life.
What if the audience doesn't know who Malcolm X is?
Oh, for God's sake. This is the story of Malcolm, born Malcolm Little, a Michigan kid, black kid, grows up, taken away from his parents, put into like the adoptive system. The only black kid at a white school, has a horrible time. Eventually, kind of goes through like the opening of Goodfellas, but for being in Boston in the 40s. gets in with a shitty racket and a gang, wears the worst zoot suits you've seen in your life. It's incredible. Goes to prison after a while, and discovers the Nation of Islam, and converts to Islam, becomes a Muslim, gets out on parole, and dedicates the rest of his life to fighting with the Nation of Islam for the black separatist cause they are known for. And it is mostly about the arc of his life then, the causes he was committed to, occasional side plots with his wife, Betty. And eventually there becomes a split in between him and the leaders of the Nation of Islam, who have not been living up to their values, which Malcolm X has been true to. And this schism is exploited famously by the FBI, and the American government wiretapping him until Malcolm is assassinated in the mid-60s by, other members of the Nation of Islam, clearly backed by the state. Very explicit how the movie like ties those lines, which I'm like, I wonder how this went down in 92 for the white people watching. concluding with, kids, like black kids around America and eventually the world, all standing up and saying, I am Malcolm X. And then the final speech is delivered by Nelson Mandela, delivering one of Malcolm's speeches, and like cuts to him for the final line, because Spike Lee is unimaginably corny. And in a movie like this, that's basically a superpower. No one else could do it like this. He just believes so strong.
That's true.
Yeah.
I thought this movie was fucking incredible. 5-star masterpiece, instant. 3 hours, 20 minutes, like, sped by. Incredible
yes,
movie.
I agree on all points. It does not feel like a long movie at all. Like, I was not bored once. I mean, I'd seen it before. But I saw it before in Black History class in high school. And I don't think we watched the whole thing. I think we, like, started from the middle. And then I think we also... because I don't think they wanted to show us, like, the crime bits when he was in school. Like, we started it from when he goes to jail and meets Brother Baines. That's when I think we started it. So we get to see the part, because the part the teacher wanted us to see especially was the part where he learns to memorize the dictionary. Because that was, like, a big deal to the teacher. but anyway, and as a high schooler, the South Africa stuff did not hit. Like, I did not get it until I became a college student and realized, oh, Nelson Mandela, like, had just gotten out of prison by the time this movie had come out. Like, he wasn't even the president of South Africa yet, right?
No, that's 94.
Yeah, like, it takes a minute, and then, like... It's so it hits a lot different knowing the stuff that I know now, but I remember thinking like, oh, this ending's a lot, but like it's actually like now that I watch it at age 38, I'm like, wow, this is intense. It's still corny, but intense.
I don't think being corny is a bad thing. Like I said, I think in this movie, the corniness is a strength. I know Spike Lee has occasionally been corny in many ways that have brought him down in the like wider culture, especially in modern times. As he's,
I mean, we talked about this when we covered Black Klansman, yes. Right?
Yes.
Which is a much less good movie. I remember liking Black Klansman, but it's not Malcolm X.
No.
Exactly. I agree.
I saw this movie when I watched all the Spike Lee movies, God, 13 years ago, something like that. And remember liking it. I gave it 4 stars, which was wrong. I gave it 5 stars when I rewatched it. I was like, what the fuck was I thinking about?
This is a 5-star movie. It's just like you watch it and you know it's a 5-star movie inherently, ontologically.
I don't even like biopics. I'm like, man, this one, fucking great.
Yeah, sometimes they just make a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, opens on the war times. I think they specifically call it the war times, right?
Yes.
The like 40s.
Yes, the war times.
Well,
yeah.
It opens a little bit with a narration of back when in the empty fields of North Omaha, which are not real, the Ku Klux Klan rode up and set fire to the like a cross on his lawn or whatever. And I'm like, look, I've driven past the birthplace of Malcolm X. It's kind of near where Destiny's grandma house lives, and there were people living there in the 1940s. It was a settled area.
It was a vibrant area. Like, it was a vibrant black area uptown. Like,
I don't doubt the Ku Klux Klan were riding around terrorizing folks. That absolutely happened. But there
were
people
coming
there.
Out to, like, the, you know,
fields.
The little fucking
homestead. It wasn't a farm in the middle of nowhere. No.
Yeah. Well, by the way, shout out to the Malcolm X Foundation in Omaha. Got a big grant, and they're going to build all this cool shit around the birthplace in the museum.
Nice.
Yeah.
But then it mostly is, him and his zoot suits running around. This was the thing that reminded me of America. Cause so much of that Troy from I talked about, so much of this is like establishing the narrative of like classic Hollywood fare. Not like, I mean, I guess old stuff, but even like you mentioned Goodfellas, but this is like the archetype of a crime film, right? Young up and comer wants to have like be upwardly mobile. The only way to do that in the world that keeps you down is through crime. And he has ups and downs because of that. And then it immediately like hard left turns because real life doesn't work that way when he goes to jail. But it's so in like a vibrant, wild Technicolor mode of these huge, loud suits. Denzel has like a different suit in every scene and they're all loud and awful every single time.
It's terrible.
Like, it opens on the first time he ever gets his hair straightened, and by the end when he's like really doing crimes, he like sits there quietly with his hair straightened and it doesn't even bother him. He doesn't even react until he realizes the water shut off because the police are coming to break down the door.
Yeah, they find him with his head in the toilet.
Yeah. and all the stuff with him running afoul of who's the guy Delroy Lindo plays? West Indian Archie, who's like a gangster who runs a numbers game. And he's like the classic, like he's the older, more like noble, other older generation of criminal. And everyone now doesn't have the same morals and honor system. Just the thing that's in all of these, like establishing a framework of this type of cinema. And then he goes to prison and quietly learns about the Nation of Islam and converts and comes out. It's weird because he gets this like vision in prison of Elijah Muhammad talking to him in a glowing chair, and then starts writing to Elijah Muhammad. And like in any other film, you'd be like, well, those letters aren't actually getting to Elijah Muhammad. That's ridiculous. But no, they are. Absolutely. Because the real life's funny like that sometimes. And also the Nation of Islam was not, it was a small but growing organization in the 50s, right? It didn't really come to prominence until a little later. One of the things that really struck me is like, by the time he gets out of prison and is like starting to like proselytize on the street, I'm like, a couple cities over is when Good Night and Good Luck is happening. And it really like underlines the two Americas that exist.
Yes.
In the world.
Yeah.
I hadn't put those two together because they're just in different universes.
Yeah.
But they happen at the same time.
There's a lot of critiques you can make about the Nation of Islam. There's the obvious problems the film talks about where Elijah Muhammad was sleeping around, abusing the trust that was placed in him by the members of his congregation to like knock up a bunch of women. Generally, the Nation of Islam is not great about women overall. They have a very traditionalist idea of that sort of stuff. But it's like the idea of a black liberationist movement that grew in the America in the fucking 40s through the 60s is like wild. Cause you look at what white America's like, and I'm like, they're over there doing this weird fucking honor four-dimensional chess game about telling McCarthy he's evil.
Yes. So they're off doing that in the early Cold War.
Yeah. You look at the, you're like, of course this is like so buttoned up and like about like the presenting like a respectable front. Everyone's in their like Sunday best at all times. Like all the men are in suits and all the women are in dresses. It is not the 70s. Black Panthers are not scaring people in the streets in the same way because you couldn't get away with that in the 50s in America, in white America.
And for all the critiques you can make of that, which I do agree with, the suits are cool. When he's
the part where Malcolm and the fruit of Islam march over to the hospital and stand vigil until the doctor comes out and tells them that guy's going to be okay is fucking incredible.
He's like commanding them with like silent hand gestures, and they're all just standing there in their suits in like formation. I'm like, these guys are fucking cool.
even the cops are kind of like, oh, like they're scared. Cool. They're like, oh, well, yeah.
There's a bit where is it those cops? Or it's like, no one man should have all that power.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what the cop says.
Which is very silly to me.
Because oh, that's yeah, where Kanye got it. Sorry, I just had one of my Dan Reichert moments. Sorry.
It's interesting to me because it depicts like Malcolm's power in the movement as like this very like rise to stardom. Like everyone's afraid of that he's going to take everything up in his name and rob everyone else of their, because like, you know, he's at the head of a bunch of the ministers, and then there's Elijah Muhammad at the head, but immediately all the ministers are like, oh, he's trying to steal your thunder, prophet, like Elijah Muhammad, and slowly convince him of that fact, when nothing could be further from the truth. Even in the movie the FBI are like, man, I don't like King, this guy's actually a monk, like, you know, Malcolm X is not sleeping around or anything, he is clean as a whistle, he truly just professes the things he believes.
Yeah, this is like one of the best things about the movie, is like the portrait of he does the thing that in the like moral framework, right, of like just general white American understanding of morality is the best thing you could, like, he goes to prison for crime, for like small time crimes, and comes out reformed by religion and is true to that forever, like never wavers from that, at least,
yeah,
and like as portrayed by the movie, and not, like, no one else is actually like living up to those standards.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because like, the book, I feel like the book, Autobiography of Malcolm X is more clear about Malcolm X has a very like negative opinion of himself as like a younger man. Right. Mm-hmm. He's like, I mean, it comes up a couple times in here, but it's like, you know, he thinks of himself as like an animal. This is what America describes to us as like, this is what we got to do to get ahead. We want to get rich and get white women. And that's what success looks like. And it brought me no happiness. And it was miserable because I was operating on someone else's like moral compass. And that compass wasn't even there to like lead me to happiness. It was to lead me to like a vision of what success looked like that would only bring me hatred from others around me. Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so when he throws that all away for the next thing, the movie itself, I think, is really invested in this idea that like changing your mind about who you are is like a valuable thing to do. Like self-analysis and wavering from the path is good sometimes. Like I think the back third of the movie is so much about his breaking with the Nation of Islam and deciding to go to Mecca and convert more thoroughly into like a more traditional Islamic mode and start his own thing and decide to work with, you know, white people and other civil rights leaders because Nation of Islam was not working with anybody at this point. The way in which that talks about that is like, you can self-identification is like a right of people to change, not only to commit to something, but then decide you want to commit to something else. I think that sort of like idea of personhood is a thing that Spike Lee is really invested in and like makes the movie about that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a movie about like, on its like most universal level, about like investing in your own beliefs through like earnestly engaging with the world around you and changing them based on new information. Like positions Malcolm as like this guiding figure of how to live like that, how to like embody that way to be. Like his entire worldview is completely destroyed when he learns all this stuff about the Nation of Islam. It's fucking bad for him. And all the scenes with him and his wife and his like realization that he was ready to die years ago. He could have done like, that was the easy part. But realizing that like he's been working for fallible and maybe fucking evil guys that didn't actually believe the thing that genuinely saved his life, and like the way he like navigates that and, you know, goes to Mecca and comes out the other side is like really good. I was not necessarily as familiar with that stuff. Like Brits were not taught about Malcolm X in school. So like my knowledge.
You know what? I wasn't really taught about Malcolm X in school either. I'll be honest with you.
But I went to a predominantly black high school.
Yes. I went to a predominantly white high school.
So yeah, it had a black history program. Like not a lot of, well, they're trying to make it illegal now, but not a lot of schools had that. Go on.
But like, I know about Malcolm X as like a cultural figure. I know about the Nation of Islam and that he was like, I know there are races of people who are like, oh, Malcolm X was killed by black on black crime type bullshit, right? So I know these narratives, but I didn't know about the like specifics of going to Mecca and the like ways in which that was the inciting incident for so much of what happened later. And that was the thing that like was just surprising to learn, was the new information for me, British white person watching this, right, is like the importance of Islam to this film, like in specific, is high, right? It treats it really seriously. In a way, because I was looking at the Wikipedia page and they were like, apparently, it was a controversy when like Spike took over directing. And like, oh, he might not do that stuff well. But
it was really funny because it's like there's a whole bit where like people, the community was worried that he was going to make the movie entirely focused on Malcolm X's youth as like a criminal. which had Spike Lee going like, nobody, I can't believe that I'm getting these critiques when I was the person who was like, they need a black director, because they had a white guy directing this, and Spike Lee had pushed to like, get someone, you need a black guy directing, like, well, how about you? And then they immediately turn around and go like, well, he's not going to do it right, he's going to make a crime movie.
Discourse has been the same forever.
I understand why people think that, like, especially in 92, Spike Lee might make a movie that is like irreverent, because a lot of the movies he made early in his career are irreverent. I mean, this movie is irreverent.
There are things in this movie that are irreverent, like, it's honest, but
I mean, Spike Lee's made a number of like civil rights history films at this point. The one I really like is Get on the Bus, mm-hmm. Which is about a bus full of men going to the Million Man March in the 90s. And it's just like an intergenerational dialogue kind of film. And it's 1,000 times more corny than Malcolm X, but I like it a lot. this earnestness isn't really in his early work as someone who's like watched all of this stuff, right? Like, it comes in later. It, like, Malcolm X is the beginning of this thing. I Do the Right Thing has this in it, but like, I understand why people didn't see it in 89, right?
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, no, it's very interesting to look at. Oh, I also wanted to say, going back to my childhood, I was taught about Malcolm X as a child, just in my family. I have I have an uncle who is in the Nation of Islam. Or I don't know actually if he is anymore, but he came out of, instead of going to prison and getting converted, he went to the Gulf War and came back converted, which caused a controversy in my very Baptist family. But anyway, when I was growing up, they had this like huge portrait of Malcolm X in their hallway, and he had very yellow, scary eyes in the portrait. And I remember I hated getting up in the dark to go to the bathroom because I would have to pass this very creepy Malcolm X painting. Just an aside.
It's interesting because I feel like in the American narrative of Malcolm X, so much more time is put on his time in the Nation of Islam and much less focus put on his conversion to like Sunni Muslim and approaching a more like traditional Muslim faith than like the new work. Right.
I also think like a lot of emphasis is put on his like conflicts with other civil rights leaders. Yes. Like, we were always told about him in this, like, in the same breath as, but he didn't like Martin Luther King, and here's, you know.
Yes.
And like the main thing about that conflict was they were, Nation of Islam did not like that the Christian civil rights movement going on at the time, they were using children for their protests, which, like, yeah, so like having kids put in the front lines of danger like that, that was like a main critique.
Mm-hmm. I also think part of that is like, especially in the 90s, Louis Farrakhan, who is the current Nation of Islam leader, was, you know, a regular figure in the news. People were talking about this stuff. So
true.
It's much more they want to talk about the Nation of Islam as it exists, because that's the thing that's still, you know, in the world and held up as like a boogeyman to white Americans.
For right. Sure, yeah. Anything that tells us to arm ourselves or have self-determination.
Yeah.
You know, us, black people.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
100 episodes. another thing just about this movie, just normal movie stuff. Beautiful. This movie is beautiful. How did this movie look so good? I was just like, kind of blown away at just how constantly good it looks. Like, all the ridiculous suits at the start of the movie, it's so colorful and full of life and great. And then when you get to like the prison movie and it's like hazy tones, that's mm-hmm. good. And then it just briefly turns into Lawrence of Arabia when they go to Mecca, like, just the visual tones of this movie is incredible. I was like, this is one of the best shot movies I've ever seen. Then I go look up who shot it, and it's Ernest Dickinson, Ernest Dickerson, which was Spike Lee's regular collaborator until this movie, which was the last movie he was ever cinematographer on, because he pivoted to being a director of almost total garbage and a lot of TV, which is the path of many cinematographers of time. Looking at the movies from the 90s, has like films such as Bulletproof, starring Damon Wayans and Adam Sandler.
Demon Knight. Oh, wow. Demon Knight's okay.
The Tales from the Crypt movie, Demon Knight, starring Billy Zane.
But he did direct multiple very important episodes of The Wire, which is what's important.
Yeah, actually. He directed the best episode of The Wire.
Wait, which one?
Episode is that?
I was just saying the final episode of season 4, just broadly. Oh, okay. Which I don't know if I 100% believe that. I'd have to rewatch it, but that's one of them. That's definitely up there.
It's up there, yeah.
It makes me feel worse than almost anything else you could possibly watch.
I know, I was about to say, just talking about it is making my eyes roll up.
No, that's fair. It's incredibly colorful, the stuff that Spike Lee's known for in the first half, and then The Nation of Islam is not, and the aesthetics of 1950s America are just not colorful, right? Like, everyone is in their dark blues and dark grays and dressed very conservatively, and that's the world that they live in at that point.
That's excellent. And obviously, Denzel's fucking killing it. Just movie star of all time here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how famous he was at this point. In 92, I assume he was already like pretty famous.
He was famous.
He'd been in Glory, so he got Oscar nom for that. Okay. But
this,
I mean, this
before
was this
Philadelphia,
was one of,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, he's been blown up, but he's about to blow up.
Because this is just like, damn, fucking movie star on screen. Him delivering the speeches, incredible. Could watch hours of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's fucking great.
I think of this as like early 90s. Like, after this, he starts doing a bunch of, you know, like more stock Hollywood movies. And for quite a while. Like, I feel like the 90s for him are a lot of that kind of film.
Mm-hmm. 2 years before Virtuosity.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Crimson Tide and Virtuosity are the same year.
Wow.
Malcolm X, Virtuosity, Double Bill. You see the whole
the whole spectrum of Denzel
in two movies.
Pelican Brief is the year after this. We watched Pelican Brief for Blockbusters, if you'd like to check that out at some point.
It's not as good as either Malcolm X or Virtuosity.
No, that's true. It really is not. Or Crimson Tide, honestly. It isn't really until like Training Day that I feel like he comes out swinging with another like huge banger. And I don't even love Training Day that much.
Training
Day is
the beginning. Oh, you go.
Oh, I was just going to ask, did he win the Oscar for that? Not that the Oscars matter at all, but I do believe
let me check.
Because he famously lost this one to De Niro, the one he got from Malcolm
X.
Yes,
he won for Best Actor.
Oh, okay, yeah, because Training Day, like, okay, I never finished Training Day, but he is very good in that.
Ethan Hawke got nominated for Best Supporting Actor in that movie, which is very funny, because Ethan Hawke should never win an Oscar for acting. I like Ethan Hawke, but come on.
Just flat across the board as a rule.
Yeah.
He's just kind of the same guy in every movie. No offense to Ethan Hawke, but show some range and I'll change my mind.
Yeah. Movie stars shouldn't get acting awards.
Wait,
you know?
Al Pacino won for Scent of a Woman?
Yes.
Yes.
Oscars are so
fake. A movie
fake.
That literally no one has ever thought of other than go, oh, that won a bunch of awards. Right. No one's seen it.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody does that impression of Pacino in it. There's that famous one from Seinfeld.
Is that from that?
Yeah, that's Son of the Woman. Yeah.
Okay. That's bigger than the movie. I didn't even know what movie that was from. looking at the Oscars 90s best actor list, like, man, Oscars are so fake.
When we looked at the list, we were talking about this one morning, and like me and Em were looking at the list. I had never heard of any of the movies that the actresses from the best actress category were nominated for, aside from Lorenzo's Oil. Like, none of these movies were memorable. None of them at all.
Tom Hanks is about to win back-to-back for Philadelphia and Forrest Gump.
Cool. Oh, Forrest Gump rears its head once again. A specter is haunting cinema. That specter is Forrest Gump.
Malcolm X is so good. I don't even have anything to say about it. It's just really good. I always get really moved when he... Well, okay, the two times I watched it always moved me when he gets to Mecca and he's like, oh, like there's... all kinds of people that believe what I believe, and it opens them up.
When he comes back, I was like, if a white boy is examined enough, maybe he can party with us. It's so cool.
So funny. Yeah, no, I super love the big change that happens for him, and I wish that that was something that more educational avenues would focus on, because, like, to me, that's, like, the important thing about him.
I love this. I think it's like one of Spike Lee's iconic scenes is the white lady in the college who goes up to him and is like, yeah, you know, I'm a good person and I understand my parents are evil and I live in evil society. What could I, a person who cares about the black struggle, do? And he just like looks at her and goes, nothing, and walks away.
It's great.
Which is like a thing that Malcolm X said happened. Like he described basically this exact situation and then said he regretted having saying that to her and he wouldn't have said that. And like now it was like later after he had converted, after leaving the Nation of Islam. I was like, this is not what I would think now. And I wish that I had made gestures toward white America. But like on some level, I think Spike Lee also is just like invested in this. The scene to me is like the key of like, Black liberation does not have to care about white fragility. Yes. It shouldn't.
It's true.
I mean, when the change happens in the movie, right? It is not framed as he became more accepting of white people. Like that's just not even like,
yes,
like that is maybe a byproduct of his change in ideology. But it's not in any way the focus. It's much more about like his change in belief of how to like tactically approach making like a materialist black state.
Yes.
Would require more cooperation among like class lines than necessarily purely just like the hard racial separation of the Nation of Islam. And it's just framed as like a tactical realization about like how to go about making a change in the world. It doesn't bring that woman back and like embarrassingly try to like go back. Because the idea that you would care about that line is just hilarious, which is funny because of how many discussions there are on the white people bringing it up as like I wonder, he didn't actually believe that, you know, the real Malcolm X said he regretted it. Like, shut up, who cares?
I think it's Spike Lee depicting Malcolm X at his literal coolest in that moment. So.
It's so cool.
Hold on. I might have lost my train of thought. Never mind.
Okay. I don't know what else to tell you.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was going to go on about Spike Lee, but I just can't remember what I was going to say.
Well, while you're remembering, I just have to mention the hilariousness of occasionally actors popping up in this movie.
Yes.
Which is, for example... Malcolm in school being lectured about how he's black, so he can't be a lawyer, by Jerry Horn.
That also made me laugh.
Immediately distracting. And then Richard Schiff is like a random interviewer at the end, like, because he's not like broken through yet. I'm like, what type is he going to do here?
And it's Christopher Plummer is the was the priest that he's talking to in prison, like just randomly.
Yep. Baby Michael Imperioli is there as like a news reporter during one of the news scenes.
Oh, I was going to say, like, we were talking about earlier just how good the movie looks. And, like, Spike Lee, you know, didn't he go to the same film school as, he went to the NYU film school?
I don't know.
Oh,
this
okay.
This is your field, Destiny, not mine.
Oh, well. Well, yeah. Just watched a lot of movies. Knows his movie history.
He went to NYU for his MFA, yes.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the movie looks fucking great. One of the final montage where like Malcolm's walking to the speech where he's like, basically knows he's going to die. And he's willingly doing, he's like called off the security because he doesn't want like people getting frisked at the door and treated with suspicion. A change is going to come is playing, everyone's driving there, he's got the classic Spike Lee shot on the, I don't even remember what the name of the like device is, but where it's like a flat, you know, rolling shot.
Oh, like the dolly where he's just like floating. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Signature Spike Lee.
And then he comes up to a woman who's like, I want to pray to Jesus for you. And it's one of the funniest lines in cinema history. It's so good. Cause like, he just looks off to the side, like, for fuck's sake. it's really good. It's like played perfect at the end. Like it doesn't like puncture the sadness of the moment. It's just such a good bit. I don't know. I was like, this, why this movie is amazing. Is being able to like through that line there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I don't know how much else I have to say, yeah. But.
Good movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
If you're like, oh, it's really long, you're right, but it goes real quick.
It goes so quick.
Fast. It's fast. What do you think about Spike Lee always tying in like the modern times to the historical stuff in movies. Like, is that heavy-handed, or
I mean, it's Coney.
Love it.
That's part of his, like, Coney-ness.
Like, this movie... Oh, go on, sorry.
I mean, that's just, like, his truth, I guess. He is a corny guy, and in a movie like this, it works really well, and sometimes it doesn't necessarily work that well. I think it depends on the context of the specific movie he's making.
I mean, yeah, I think Malcolm X comes by it really honestly, because we live in... you know, in America where the civil rights project has largely failed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you going to do?
Absolutely.
Okay. We got questions.
We do have questions.
Let's answer them.
If you'd like to send questions, you can send them to abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. They can be about anything, not just the movie you're covering. I'm going to do these questions. Then we got a thing at the end, a more special thing for our 100th episode. Eric writes in, here's a question. Which of the 100 movies you've covered would be the most fun to see sweated by Mos Def and Jack Black and Be Kind Rewind? Where I was like, I have not seen that, Destiny. What does this mean?
It means when they erase all the movies on the videotape, so they make, like, YouTube-style, low-budget recreations.
Yeah, that's what Destiny explained to me. Okay. I feel like Playtime would be a silly one, but I'm only thinking of it because I just watched it last night. Oh, congrats on watching Playtime. It's a great film. Which one? What are you going to do?
Well, it means specifically by Jack Black and Mos Def, right? Like, not just the concept of it, it's Jack Black.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay, then I would like to see The Madness of King George, please.
Oh, man, that'd be really good.
That is, that's Jack a good Black one. Doing his kingly shit. He could also do the Amorphal Seasons if he wants. You know, take any of the British talkie movies about doing that.
I think my answer is Stalker.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Destiny.
I'd love to see their take on Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So many movies about being in a place that you wouldn't get. Erase the place. Karen writes in, if you had to pick one film covered on Repertory Screens to watch once a day for the rest of your life, what would you pick?
Oh, whatever's the shortest one. Like, there's not a single film that I like enough where that would become a factor.
Well, that's probably a question. You have to pick beyond the shortest one.
Because I don't want to watch a film every day. It doesn't matter how good the
film
is.
But this is your curse. You have to pick one. This is your you've done something unforgivable, and this is your punishment. But you do get a little leeway in that you get to pick your poison here.
All right, Hero.
Okay, did we watch that for this?
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
Damn, that's a good answer.
For me, it's a tie between Barton Fink... And, oh, what the heck was the other one? It's like a tie between that and Putney Swope. Like, I feel like I could watch those every day and not... I've already seen Barton Fink a lot, so, like, it would just be, like, comforting for me.
It's hard, right? Because you're, like, every day. The same movie every day?
So you understand. It's not you'd hate it. It wouldn't even make it a week without hating the movie.
I don't think that's true.
I've watched a movie once a week, like, repeatedly, and didn't get tired of it.
I think my answer is Three Colors Blue.
Ugh. too sad to watch every day.
Yeah, I know. It is sad. That's why it's part of why I like it. I feel like if I'm going to carry a movie with me, it's always in my mind because I just watched it. I'm going to pick the one that means the most to me, and that's high up there. Crystal writes in with a question that I feel like Crystal knows none of us can answer, which is, what are good movies about Islam? I don't fucking know. Crystal, what are good movies about Islam? Write in. You answer.
Yeah, we're not, that's just, you know, not necessarily our area of study.
The audience, if you have good movies about Islam, let me know. What's good?
Not Mustang.
That's true.
That's as far as I'll go in my research.
I'm going to save Rick's for when we do the other stuff. Odette writes in, you've been given the opportunity to curate a selection of films for the Criterion Collection. Congrats. The rules, though, are you can only select films that we've watched for the show, and the theme can't just be you watched it for the show. What you got?
With Noel and I, Mikey and Nikki, all the President's Men, Point Break, and you just call it homoeroticism.
Oh, there you go. That's not bad.
I have no idea. I don't know what, like, I
give you these early so you can do the research, so you have an answer when you come here.
Sorry. Sorry. I don't have this one prepared. I'm looking at the list and I'm like, I got nothing.
Well, I will go with mine while you think about it. So one of the things that struck me was watching this, I'm like, I don't know if we have like a lot of movies of a type enough to like do like really a lot of these, which I think is like a commendation for the podcast, the general like breadth of cinema watched. But the closest thing I came was something like Daughters of the Dust and Watermelon Woman. And I guess like Waiting to Exhale. And I guess Love and Basketball is like a, you know, saying black feminist is maybe a little stretching it a bit, but that's close I got in terms of like, you know, black women on film.
As a black lady, I don't think that, I think you could have feminist critiques of all those movies
in an interesting way.
Yeah.
I look at this and I'm like, there's lots of different like things we could do. You put all the British movies together. I haven't realized that every time I picked a British movie, it's not even just me. Someone's picked them. Destiny never picked a British movie. But
I picked with Noel and I.
Was that you? Okay, you never mind.
Yeah, that was me.
But they're usually good. I feel like the because I'm generally against 80s movies in my like life, but then I look at the 80s movie we've done, and I'm like, we picked some good fucking 80s movies, like, you know, Excalibur, Paris, Texas, Streets of Fire, My Beautiful Laundrette, which are, and Poltergeist, which aren't just like movies from, like, there's also movies from the 80s, like, you know, King's Comedy is there, which is, I do not think of that in like the same vein of like, this is an 80s movie that is very 80s, but I still think it's good. Like The Streets of Fire, which is like a bad movie that I just love because the heart of cinema, I can't deny the end of that movie in my heart. Yeah. So that's my pick, I guess, for my rushed, disappointing answer.
Charlie Sin, what's your favorite licensed song in this movie? It's gotta be Changes Is Gonna Come.
Yeah, right. Classic montage.
Yeah.
Does anybody know how much involvement of the FBI was around at the time when the movie came out? Like, how much did people know? I kind of depends. I think it probably depends greatly on who you ask, because I think a certain subset of people in the world would always assume the FBI is involved.
Yes. Because yes. They'd be involved.
Yeah. That continues to be a going concern. There's like news just a couple weeks ago about this, right? Destiny had looked it up.
Oh,
they're like a continuing investigation on this
stuff?
Yeah,
because the police at the time like hid a bunch of evidence pointing to the people who did it, and they want to open it up, I guess. I guess Malcolm X's family is suing the FBI.
Mm. What are your thoughts about the critique that Spike Lee is too obvious?
I love it. I eat it up.
I love it.
I love it. The Five Bloods, oh my God, he links that to so much stuff like within Black Lives Matter, and it is kind of eye-rolly, but it is amazing.
I would rather someone be too obvious and on the nose than to not bother and, you know, to be, like, too detached to do that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Movies are about things, and it's fine to just, like, draw the lines to the things that your movie's about on the screen. It's good. Sometimes it's okay to just point out, this is a symbol for this thing. Please consider it.
Yes.
Because not every member of your audience is going to know, and even if they did, it's nice to just be clear about where you're at and what you're about.
That's generally what I think.
Adrian writes in, I first watched Malcolm X in high school history class. If you ended up as history teacher, what other film that you've covered for repertory screens do you think would be fun or interesting to build a lesson around?
I would make my kids watch Wind That Shakes the Barley and Battle of Algiers, and I'd be like, this is revolution, children.
You know what? That's correct. That's maybe the most right answer you've got.
You stole me and M's boring, obvious answer. for the boring
comments. That was a really good answer. That was a really good answer, though. That's true. I mean, you can just show him Punishment Park. Just really true. Lean in.
Yeah, that movie's, yeah, brutal.
I have an unconventional answer.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which is, you show them Crash and teach about like how highways are not natural and the forces that like cause America to look like that. Why
I'm gonna, never I'm gonna show, I'm gonna show them playtime and give them the exact same lesson.
That's my double bill. Crash and playtime.
Yeah. God. Stupid. Related question. For whatever reason, in high school, I ended up seeing Saving Private Ryan three different times in different classes. In health class, my teacher played the movie Happy Gilmore one day. I still don't remember why. Do any of you have similarly strange repeat viewings of movies from school or just a particularly odd movie a teacher showed you? I don't actually have one of these.
I am of the age, which is younger than you, so you wouldn't have got this because you were out by the time this movie came out. But let me tell you, they absolutely fucking loved to play Tomorrow Never Dies in any... Not Tomorrow Never Dies. That's the James Bond movie. What's the movie with the global... The Emmerich movie with the frozen New York?
Oh, The Day After Tomorrow.
The Day After Tomorrow. Absolutely loved to show that in science classes on the last day of school. And you would absolutely watch the first half of everyone dying. Maybe you'd get to them burning stuff in the library, but mostly you'd just leave.
That movie sucks.
Hey, let me tell you, not a good movie. I don't think I've seen it all the way through even one time.
I think I saw it in the theater because it was 2004 and I was just going to the movies a lot back then.
Yeah.
This was early in my, like, I don't think disaster movies are very good.
Well, you're watching bad ones.
Name me a good one.
Not one of that one. Not that one. Yeah. Another one.
Nope.
I mean, I
Destiny, you said you had a crazy answer for this one.
Oh, not a crazy answer, but I have a few funny ones. Okay, so in German class, we just watched things in German. And sometimes they were related to German culture, like we watched Run, Lola, Run. Neverending Story, because I guess that's based on a German book. But then we'd watch things like The Truth About Cats and Dogs. Completely in German. Just why? Why the random Uma Thurman, Jeanine Garofalo 1996 romantic comedy? Why? Then in middle school, I had a teacher who hated doing lesson plans, apparently, because we were forever, like multiple times in class, made to watch the 1990s, I don't remember what year exactly, I believe it is 4-part TV movie about the Temptations.
Okay.
It's just about, you know, how they got started and the 60s and when they went big and then like all their little inner conflicts and some of them died. And then like at the end, like one of the sweet ones dies and then there's only one guy left and Smokey Robinson sings. He's got a cameo. He sings at the funeral. I've seen this movie so many times. So, yeah, that's a funny one. I had a teacher show us Forrest Gump once because it was his favorite movie when he was in basic training. And he had, like, no lesson plan. So it's like, oh, we're going to watch Forrest Gump.
This is why I've only seen the first 80 minutes of Forrest Gump because that was all Mr. Bangs could show us in P-class or whatever.
That's hilarious. One of my favorites was when I was working as a teaching assistant in the Omaha Public Schools, and we were doing a unit on Frankenstein, and we got to show all the high schoolers Young Frankenstein. That was really fun because they just had no idea. We blew their little minds.
All right. Again, if you want to send in questions, you can do that at neuralmappingpodcast@gmail.com. We've got a special thing. We got a quiz that Hilver sent in, who loves stats and had Jackson export the little stats sheet of everything in our Letterboxd list. If you want to see all the movies we've covered, you can go to Letterboxd, check out Head Falls Off profile. It's on there. Anyway, I'm going to link you this if you want to follow along, the two of you. Do not highlight anything because it'll uncover answers because the answers are in white. So if you like scroll over them, I will do all of that. You just get to look at this if you want. You don't even have to look at it because I'll read it if you don't want to. So I'm going to read this out. Congratulations on 100 episodes of the podcast in this format. Yes, this only covers the 100 Rep Toy Screenings episodes. 100 films is a lot, but also just a drop in the bucket of the medium. I hope that putting numbers to that list so far is an exercise in reflection and not reduction.
101 format. Films, because M had us watch 2 one time.
More than that, it's actually 102.
Okay.
Because you hadn't added
Malcolm X.
You haven't added Malcolm X to the Letterboxd list.
What was the second time we did 2?
I was asking Destiny this on... No, Close Up Long Shot does not count. It's not on the list. I was asking Destiny this over breakfast. Jackson, what are the 2 double features we've done?
I don't even... Okay, can I...
I'll give you a hint. Don't look at the list. One of them is Japanese.
Oh, one of them was the Seiji and Suzuki movies.
Yes. Can you name those movies?
Tokyo Drifter, and the other one that was better. what the fuck was that movie called?
It was called... Go on.
That movie is Branded to Kill.
Branded to Kill. Thank you. Yes.
What's the other double feature?
Ooh, how am I meant to fucking know this?
It was fairly recent.
We only have the one Decline of Western Civilization movie on here, right?
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Right, yeah, we didn't watch the other one for the show.
I don't know.
The other one is The Hustler and The Color of Money.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes, yes, of course it was.
I forgot as well, so... But I also don't remember watching Throne of Blood.
Destiny truly doesn't just... She's like, I've never seen Throne of Blood. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I have no memory of us watching this. Apparently, there's a podcast where I talk about it with y'all, but I don't remember watching it.
Anyway, I'm going to do this quiz now, and I will read the questions. So I've looked at this first one, so I can't... Because I looked at it on mobile, and mobile doesn't have white text. So I've seen the answer to this first question here. What is the earliest film we've covered? And you can't... Ideally, don't look at the Letterboxd list okay, anymore. I'll throw that away.
I just had it open, so I'll look at it.
Yeah.
No longer. Earliest film.
Yes.
Okay, so did we do anything earlier than Citizen Kane? That's the question. There's that one old ass movie we did. What was it called?
Which one?
I think that might have been after Citizen Kane, so never mind.
I don't think we've done anything older than Citizen Kane. Yeah.
I think it's Citizen Kane. I don't think we've done a third
movie. I agree.
It's not Citizen Kane.
Ooh, is it
earliest
the man?
Film? Wait, oh. What?
Is it the woman from Shanghai?
No.
Okay.
The earliest film is M from 1931.
Is what?
M from 1931.
Oh, M! Right, yes! Shit,
yeah. Yeah, I forgot about M.
One of the first sound films.
What is the newest film we've covered? I don't actually know. Now I don't know. So.
Everything
the
Ever newest?
Wants. It's yeah. Gotta be that, right?
Yeah.
There's no way it's not that.
There's no way.
Anything newer than that? I don't think so.
Okay. Yep. Everything Everywhere All at Once from 2022.
Bam, bam, bam. Nailed it.
Year with the most films covered on the podcast.
Year, not decade. Year.
Year.
1979? That's a guess.
1992.
I think it's much more likely to be in the 90s. I'm going to say 90. Yeah. It can't be 92, but I'm going to say 94.
I think it's a 90s year.
Okay. It is 1982 with four movies.
1982.
Creepshow, King of Comedy, 48 Hours, and Poltergeist are all 1982.
There you go.
Oh.
They're all from four very different 1982s, to be fair.
Between 1940 and 2023, how many years have a film covered on the podcast?
Okay, so we know that the newest one is 2022.
Yes.
I would say...
This is a number out of 84. Because the 84 is the max you could have here.
Oh.
50 years. And we've missed a lot of years.
I'm going to say 40 years.
I think
I'm going to say 60.
No, it's not that high because there's too many.
That's really high.
There's too many like decades that we only have a couple.
All right.
Here we go. 59 out of 84.
Never mind. Destiny was right.
Destiny was almost right on the money. Or 69%. Nice, 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 nice,
nice, nice, nice, nice.
You can see when I highlight this, right?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Average year of release.
Average year.
Yeah.
Phew.
1979.
I'm gonna say because.
I do think it pushes it way down. Yeah, I think it's in the 70s.
I feel like we do a lot of 70s and
60s stuff. I think it's like 84 because we do a lot of...
I'm going to say 71.
71? Okay.
Destiny?
Oh, I was joking when I said 79, but like it's going to be like between... Can I say between...
No.
No,
okay,
pick a year.
All right, 1974.
1980.
Oh.
Should have stayed with 79.
Yeah, I should have.
Starting from the two films covered in 1930, can you guess higher or lower than the number of each film covered in the next decade?
Okay. 1940, higher.
Higher than two, you think?
I think, well, either it's either two or higher than two. Because Citizen Kane Destiny. And Lady from Shanghai are both 40, so we only need one more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Destiny, you say higher?
I'm going to say higher as well.
All right. Three. One higher.
All right. Keep the higher train
1950s. Did we cover more or less than three movies?
I think we did higher as well.
I also think this is higher.
I think it's going to be higher all the way to 70.
All right. 10 movies for the 1950s.
Ooh, oh, wow.
Okay. Now I'm like, I don't know if...
1960s got to be lower,
it's
right?
Gotta be
it
lower.
Has to be
it's
lower.
Gotta be lower. It's got to be lower for the 60s and higher for the 70s.
I think it's higher.
I don't think the 60s
is a very retro screening decade for us. I'm saying lower than 10.
All right, Dusty says higher. We say lower. It is 20 movies.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I feel like, yeah.
Damn. 1970s, gotta be lower. There's no way we've done over 20 70s movies.
Yeah, I also say lower.
Higher.
Jeff Pearson's voice bigger.
Hit me.
All right. 13 from
God
the 1970s.
How many 60s movies? What the fuck was... Once we're done with this, I'm going to go check the sheet.
All my European movies are from the 60s, apparently. I think, is the problem.
Yeah, it's a great decade for film.
1980s.
Lower, but like one. I think it's like 12.
Yeah, I think it's probably lower, but by very little.
Okay, lower.
16, higher.
Damn. Have we overcompensated thinking that we're 70s movie sickos and not being 70s movies?
Yeah. 1990s. Lower. It's got to be lower.
No, higher.
Then 16?
Yeah.
I feel like we don't have enough numbers for that, but maybe.
I'm going to say lower.
I'm going to say lower as well. 21. Fuck.
Fuck.
Had to be 90s.
Jackson knew.
Had to be 90s. I'm glad I got redeemed after losing so hard on the 60s and 70s.
The 2000s.
Definitely
lower.
Lower,
but not by too much. But I think 90s and 2000s are two high decades. I didn't realize that 60s would be competing as well, but...
Yeah, I think it's lower. Nine.
Nine, okay.
2010s.
Ooh.
I bet that's about the same as the 2000s.
I bet that's lower. I bet... you know what? I bet it is... God. I think it's close. I think it might be a little higher, but by like one or two.
Yeah, I think it's close as well. I'm going to say higher. I think it might have a 10 or 11.
I'm going to say lower.
All right. Seven.
Seven, okay. And then 2020s is like nothing. It's like two, so lower.
Yeah. Lower. One. One movie from the 2020s.
Like, I could have worked that out by working out how many have we done so far. Technically, by the laws of maths, I should not have failed so hard on the final answers there, but I don't know how to count, so there's that.
Yeah, I don't do math.
You want to guess the median year?
Well, by definition, it's got to be like in the 80s. Like 80...
I never remember what median means.
It's the middle?
Because we already have average year of release, so that's the mean, right? That's the mean.
81 mm-hmm. is the median year. I don't know.
It's okay. Got to be something like that. 81. Right.
1982. You were close.
Well, I can see all the numbers, and I can. That's enough math I can do. It's got to be 81.
Standard deviation of years. There's an explainer here. Standard deviation is roughly how many years either side of the mean year would cover the majority of films covered.
I'm already glazing over too many statistics words.
So if the average year of release, which is the mean, so the average year of release for us is 1980, how many years would we have to go off of 1980 to cover 51 of the years or whatever
15
for
years.
The majority?
If you're looking at this, 15 years. Possibly 17. Yeah,
I think 15 is probably right. Destiny?
Please
stop
15.
Asking me questions of statistics.
Yeah, math questions. I don't
20 years. 20 years are standard deviation. Years, okay. Is that good that it's higher? I think it's probably
good. That's good. That's good. That's what you want, a widespread.
Mm-hmm. Directors and languages, section 2. Note for hosts. I don't know if you want to skip this question or not. We're not going to. We were talking to Destiny about who picked early movies, and I reminded Destiny we weren't doing the circle of picking movies back when we had to do half female directors. Then we dropped it because it's hard to pick all. I mean, we could, but in terms of getting movies people actually want to like tune into our podcast for. It was very hard
Two counterposed girls, which was classic movies that we want to have seen for the like cultural importance.
Yes.
And movies directed by women, which are usually not in the first category on account of the sexism that was all around.
Yeah. yeah.
Ratio of male to female directors on our coverage.
I would say, I think it still is.
I think it's 6-1.
I think it's
8-1. I'm going to go with M's answer.
Would you say, Jackson?
8-1.
All right. 4.4 male directed films to 1 female directed
film. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That is pretty good.
I thought we've completely failed, but you know what?
Yeah. The Orson Welles Award for directors with multiple entries on the list. How many directors have more than one film on the list?
Oh, right. Shit. Okay, so Spike Lee.
Spike Lee.
Orson Welles.
Shizune Suzuki.
Yes.
Yes.
Scorsese.
Yes.
I know there's somebody we're overlooking.
Who are we overlooking?
Isn't there somebody we're overlooking?
We don't cover Spielberg on this show. That's blockbusters.
I feel like there's at least one more.
Because we've currently got 4.
Yeah, I can't think of any others.
I'm gonna go with four.
But I don't, yeah.
All right. Orson Welles, 3 movies. 8 other directors have 2 films. Holy fuck.
Okay, never mind. Back to the storyboards.
Martin Scorsese.
Yep.
Catherine Bigelow.
Ah, shit. Yeah. What was the second Catherine Bigelow movie? Oh, Point Break.
Yeah. Fred Zinnemann.
Who?
Fred Zinnemann. I don't know. Who would Fred Zinnemann do?
Is that the 82 Hours?
I don't know. You can Google Fred Zinnemann.
Fred Zinnemann.
Zinnemann, no R.
Zinnemann. Among his films were The Search, The Men, High Noon, From Here to Eternity, Oklahoma, The Nun Story, A Man for All Seasons. There it is.
High Noon and A Man for All Seasons. Okay.
I would not have put those two together.
Me neither.
Though I guess I see
Philip
it.
Philip Kaufman.
2 movies?
I'm just reading the thing. Philip Kaufman, what we got?
Invasion of the Body Snatchers and The Right Stuff.
Oh, there you go. Seijin Suzuki.
Yep.
Stanley Kubrick. Forgot about Kubrick.
Me too.
Walter Hill. Forgot about Walter Hill.
Me too.
That was the guy I was thinking of. He's the...
And Spike Lee.
I should have got Walter Hill.
Percentage of films where English is the main spoken language.
I feel like we did really well, but we don't do as well as I'd like.
75%.
Yeah.
Same. Oh, really? I was going to say like 45%. But maybe I'm just thinking about my diet lately of films. All right. 68% or 69 films out of 102.
Nice.
The next 2 most common languages and in what order? French.
French and Japanese. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I think
agreed.
Japanese. French, 8 films. Japanese, 7 films.
So here's the thing, is when I think about foreign movies, I don't tend to count Japanese movies because all my friends are weebs, so it doesn't feel like the, like, when you're watching foreign movies, you want to assume there's an intentional, move to step out of your comfort zone, to expand your cultural horizons, which I don't necessarily think is true if I go and watch a Yakuza movie, right?
I don't necessarily think that's true when I'm watching most of like the big if I'm watching French movies either, so you know what.
Yeah.
Runtime. Section 3 is runtimes. Average film length. Rick also gave us a shortest runtime question, so sorry Rick, you've been scoped by Hilver.
113 minutes.
Ooh, I like that as an answer.
I like that too.
I think it's a little less. I think it's like 102.
No, I think it's got to be over 110 because we've watched some long ass movies.
The answer is 112 minutes.
Fuck, wow. Yes! Let's
Jackson!
Go!
Holy shit.
Longest film.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Longest film. Oh, yeah. I'm going to say Lawrence of Arabia.
Because Ten Commandments was blockbuster, so it's got to be Lawrence of Arabia.
I don't remember how long Lawrence of Arabia is. Is Malcolm X shorter than Lawrence?
It had an intermission.
That doesn't mean it's short.
Malcolm X is shorter than Lawrence of Arabia by like 20 minutes.
All right. Let's go. Lawrence of Arabia, 228 minutes. It is shorter by 26 minutes.
There you go. Nailed it.
Shortest film.
How long was like The Watermelon Woman? We've got to have
some. I don't think it's that. I do think we have some like 80 minute. I think we have like 70 minute.
We've definitely got a 70 minute movie in there. Like, how long was Punishment Park?
I think it's one of the like 1930s films. Like one of the.
Yeah, 40s, I was gonna say, like, is M really short?
M's 90 minutes.
No, but we did. What's the rules of the game? Do we do that for this podcast?
Yes, 2 hours. It's not rules of the game. I know it's not rules of the game.
Okay. I bet the answer is like, I don't know what the longest is, but I think the answer is in like the 73 or 74 minutes range.
Like,
how long was the one we just watched? The Ikari,
it's a 128.
I thought that was like 83 or 84 or something.
I thought it was 128 on my file.
Yeah, right. It might've been. I don't know. It's not the winner here.
Okay. I don't really have a guess. I have no idea.
Jackson, you want to pick one?
I don't know. Like, Hero? With Hero, like, 80 minutes?
Hero's really long.
No, Hero's not long. What are you talking about? Hero's like 90 minutes long.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know the answer then. All right, we're just going to look at it. Outrage at 75 minutes.
Okay. Many moons ago, when we asked the first question about Deckers, like, there was an old movie that we watched, and I couldn't remember the name of it. I knew it was about women.
Outrage.
That's the movie I remembered.
Films over 3 hours.
Right.
Okay, we've got Malcolm X, Lawrence of Arabia.
Is that it? How many other films? The Right Stuff meets it by like 1 minute, and you're still mad about it. We've got three. Do we have another one? Do we genuinely have another one?
I don't know.
I bet it's...
I don't really think about it.
Three as well.
I'm going to say four just to...
Just to be different? Just making sure I don't fit in?
Yeah. Four movies. Lawrence of Arabia... The Right Stuff, Malcolm X, and Diwali Dulhania Le Jengi.
I forgot about the Bollywood movie.
Man, that movie was fucking great. What a
shit. It was really fun. I need to watch more movies.
Films 90 minutes or less.
That's, I would say, we're doing 12. We did about 12.
I'm going to say.
This is a really short entry, so I don't think it has them listed. It's probably, there's too many. Would be my guess.
I bet there's like 15.
It could be in the 20s, I guess, but like. I think that's more like 93 minutes, right?
I'm going to say 90. Like six of them. 19.
19, damn.
Yeah. Okay. Time to watch all the films on the list in days.
In days?
Yeah.
32 days.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to say 12 days.
I don't, how many, 24 hours in a day, could watch like 10, I'm going to say a fortnight, 14 days.
I probably went way too far.
7.8 days, really? 7 days and 19 hours. Yep.
I'd recommend not doing that.
Yeah. I'm not going to do median mode and standard deviation of these. You can look that up yourself if you're interested. Section 4, genre, using letterbox genre tags.
Oh.
Okay.
Top three genres.
Drama.
Yeah, drama.
From there, I don't know where we tend to go.
Horror? We did like some horror sets that might.
Because I'm on this podcast.
Yeah, but we tried a couple years in a row to do like little horror ones that you could do.
I don't know.
Thriller, maybe?
Thriller, maybe. Not sci-fi.
Comedy?
What about comedy? Yeah,
comedy. I'm just thinking, like, what are the drama genres?
Drama, comedy, what else?
Action. Not adventure, action, but, like...
I don't know, like...
Yeah. Like, what would you call, like, Master and Commander? Like...
Drama.
Okay.
Maybe, I hate drama as a, like, genre term. All films have drama. What are you fucking talking about?
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Well, okay, I'm just going to expose the answer then, all right?
Yes.
Okay.
Drama, comedy, thriller.
Oh, thriller.
We were just right. We were just correct.
I said thriller. How many films have the most common genre tag?
All of them, because they're all drama.
Drama. They're all drama. I bet it's about 40 films.
I'd say at least
60 of these movies have tagged with drama.
I agree with Jackson. I think it's going to be in the 60s somewhere.
Okay. 70 for drama.
Useless.
Next highest is comedy with 31.
Completely useless. I vote to ban drama as a genre in movies because it just, what are you talking about?
Which film or films have the most genre tags?
Okay, let's think. Movie with a lot of stuff happening.
I think it's Everyone, Everywhere, Everything, All at Once, because it's new and does a lot of
You're almost certainly right, because everyone's being really precious about it, probably.
You gotta be right, yeah.
All right. Five each for 48 Hours.
Okay.
Action, thriller, crime, drama, comedy.
I'm being radicalized against Letterboxd with every single word.
And the other one, the five each, is The Man Who Stole the Sun, action, thriller, crime, science fiction, comedy.
Oh my gosh.
Least common genre. Well,
I
musical.
Don't know what the genres are.
Musical.
Western.
Oh, I think we've done more Westerns than musicals.
Have we done one musical?
The Bollywood movie.
Oh, okay.
Didn't we do an American in Paris?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, an American in Paris. So yeah, we've done more musicals. Westerns than we've done musicals. Fantasy and Western tied for two each.
Oh, what fantasy films have we done?
Excalibur.
Fantasy is Orlando and F for Fake.
Excalibur should be on the fantasy list. What are you talking about?
I agree.
Western is High Noon and Unforgiven, which I thought there was another one in there, but
I thought there was one more.
Also noted here, Orlando and High Noon also both have the drama tag.
Because Jackson's right.
Which has more occurrences on the list, horror or sci-fi?
Sci-fi.
But it's not that, not by too much.
Horror. It's horror.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Six sci-fi to eight horror.
Oh, wow. Oh,
there you go.
This is
Section five, the Academy.
Let's go. Let's get those real stupid parts of the list.
data from Wikipedia noted here. Number of films on the list nominated for at least one Academy Award. Like 80.
It's a lot.
No. 50.
Oh, but we have so many foreign ones, so maybe not.
I was going to say, like.
Oh, that's maybe 40 true. Maybe 40 then?
Because we go for like some of the big ones. We're not like an obscure movie podcast, like obviously.
No, we're like somewhere in the middle. So I'm going to say like 45.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 60.
I'm going to say under half. So I'm going to say 45, 50 around that area.
All right. 33.
There you go.
Oh.
So we're all way over. Number of films on the list to win an Academy Award.
Well, can't be more than 33.
Yes. I'm going to say 20.
Yeah. I'm going to say half. I'm going to say 15.
All right. 18.
Oh.
Most wins.
Most wins. What's the movie we did that's the most like Oscar sweepish?
Probably like either Everything Everywhere All at Once or Lawrence in Arabia.
It's probably Everything Everywhere All at Once won literally everything. It's probably fucking boring.
I was going to say Lawrence Arabia, but you've won me over to be cynical, so I guess I'm going to say that as well.
Because they were nominated for a fuck ton.
So I just did the first line, three-way tie for seven each. So think of the third movie.
So Lawrence Arabia, brainstorm. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
And Master Commander.
It's definitely not Master Commander.
What's another Oscar winner movie?
I don't think Do the Right Thing won seven Oscars.
No, it didn't. So.
Malcolm X should be one of these. Malcolm X should have swept in this way.
I agree.
Because I feel like it hits all the right beats, except being too black.
Ooh, I don't know this third one. I'm lost. I have no idea.
Seven?
The right stuff? Could it be the right stuff?
I don't remember hearing about. They didn't win best picture.
Oh, Unforgiven. It's Unforgiven.
Oh, fuck. Oh, yeah, it's got to be Unforgiven.
Is it? Okay, let's find out.
I think it's Unforgiven. Unforgiven won a lot of Oscars,
right? It did.
Best actor. So Al Pacino did.
All right, here we go. I'm just going to reveal it. An American in Paris, Lawrence of Arabia, and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, wow. Forgot about 50s musicals.
Number of best picture winners.
Five.
Ooh.
I'm
going to say four.
Okay, hold on, let me think. So, did Lawrence of Arabia win Best Picture?
I don't know.
Okay, Everything Everywhere All at Once, American in Paris.
That really won Best Picture, man. Movies are so washed.
It won everything. It won everything. Ever.
All the nominees, like, won.
The biggest awards controversy for Everything, Ever, All at Once was that the wrong supporting actor won over another person in Everywhere, Everything, All at Once. Kind of fucking bullshit going on.
Destiny, you said 5. Jackson, you said 5. I'm bumping it up to 4. 6. Okay. 6. You won.
I just thought 4 was too small. I was like, last minute hesitation.
An American in Paris, Lawrence of Arabia, Everything Ever All at Once, The Apartment, A Man for All Seasons, and Unforgiven.
There you go.
For the record, I liked Everything Everywhere All at Once. I feel like the podcast episode, it feels like
I'm the only hater on the episode. M's kind of been drafted into it by Time and Culture.
I've definitely been drafted into it by Time and Culture.
I would watch that movie right now if you were like, it's on, let's watch it. And I'd be like, yeah.
Film with most nominations without a win.
Oh, I bet Malcolm X is. I don't think it's the answer, but I... What do I think the answer is?
I don't know. I don't even have a guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
Going to say... The Hustler?
Okay. Good Night and Good Luck with 6 nominations.
Oh wow.
That's that. Good Night and Good Luck is the epitome of a movie that gets a million nominations and doesn't win anything.
Section 6, the internet.
The final section. Now we get to roast Letterboxd.
I don't use Letterboxd. I don't know if these are meaningful data points, but they are the ones I saw listed. All numbers accurate as of the 11th of February, 2024, with the exception of Malcolm X, which hadn't been announced as the film yet. Average Letterboxd rating.
I'm going to say 4 stars.
No, that's not a Letterboxd type vibe. 3.5. Maybe 3.2, actually.
I think you're probably right, Jackson.
I think our propensity for old movies just inherently slides that down.
3.9.
I think it's in the 3 point something, but it could be anywhere in that range.
Most common letterbox rating.
Oh, 3.9 the actual answer?
Yeah, 3.9 is the
actual answer. I thought it was your guess. Sorry. Yeah, there you go.
No. Most common letterbox rating.
I still think it's 4 stars.
Mode. Okay. Yeah, 4 stars is the most common rating.
All right. 4.0, yeah. Correct. Highest rated. Everything Ever All at Once,
yeah,
right?
Everything Ever All at Once is literally the highest rated movie on the site, so yes.
I think it's Citizen Kane.
No, Destiny, I have to sit you down and explain what Letterboxd is one of these days.
Paris is Burning is the winner at 4.5.
Oh, damn. Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. Lowest rated film on the website.
Is it Torque?
It's definitely not Torque.
It might be Torque. You never know. Punishment Park's probably pretty low.
Yeah, movies that people haven't really seen are probably low.
Fewest, most infused views is the next question. This is rating.
Yeah.
Lowest rated.
The thing is, you want movies seen enough by people, but old and weird enough that it would get low reviews. Because if it's seen by no one, but everyone has seen it, liked it, then it gets high on the ratings.
Yeah.
That's why every anime movie has like 12 ratings and they're all 5 stars.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Torque's a fine answer. It's not gonna be Life of Brian, right?
People love that movie. People love it. I had somebody who listened like, I liked it more than you guys.
Well, I would imagine if most listeners would like it more than us, considering we didn't like it at all.
All right. Torque, 2.4. Only film to have less than 3-star rating on the list.
I called it.
People need to understand culture in this world.
No, I'm with Destiny. Torque's bad.
Torque's bad.
We watched Torque the last time and were like desold on Torque. The key is large. It's a large key.
The key is large. You're right. The large key is good, but the rest of Torque is bad. Most views. That's Everything Everywhere All at Once,
yes,
right?
Yes, I agree.
Everything Everywhere All at Once at 2.5 million views.
That's a lot of views.
Fewest views.
What's
this
that?
This is Punishment
movie
Park,
watch?
Watermelon Woman, something in that, Wonder, maybe. I don't know, but something along those lines.
That Japanese movie with the motorcycle?
His Motorbike Island?
Yes.
It's not that one.
It's not that. No, that's too much of a film Twitter.
Yeah, that's a film Twitter darling.
See, I don't know. I think it's Ikari 1B.
XB1. I mean, that could be. It could be that.
I think it's a Watermelon Woman.
Okay. Jackson's chose racism.
That movie's very beloved in 90s indie culture.
Jackson's chosen a dozen things the Letterboxd viewers are necessarily watching 90s black cinema.
I know. I know. I think The Ascent might be pretty high up there in terms of fewest views.
Maybe.
What's the answer? The answer is The Man Who Stole the Sun at 3,982 views.
I should have, you know what? I should have put that together.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Median views. What do you think the median view is? I think it's like 10,000. No, it's got to be higher than that, actually.
I would 50? Say 20,000.
Okay.
Because it's no idea.
Like, you can't look at the 2.5 million and if that means anything. It's an exponential curve.
Yeah, right.
So I would say about 20,000.
Okay. Destiny, got anything? Or are you willing to go with that?
I have no idea, my friends.
Okay. 84,408.
Oh.
So fuck your exponential curve. Most likes. What's the movie with the most likes?
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, this is again boring.
Everything Everywhere All at Once with 1.3 million likes. Fewest likes.
Wait, that means the fucking over half of the people that watched Everything Everywhere All at Once on Letterboxd clicked as liked on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
I don't use the like feature like that on Letterboxd. I didn't realize.
I only use the like for like 5-star fucking classics.
I only do it for movies that I've already seen that I love. Capital L, 5-star.
I feel like the 5-star already like encompasses. I try not to use the like feature. I'm like
fewest likes. Gotta be Man Who Stole the Sun, right?
Man Who Stole the Sun. If it only had 3,000 people watch it, I don't know.
I agree, but yeah, that's what I'm gonna say too.
You're gonna be mad about this one, Jackson. Top Cappy at 1,117 likes.
Aw.
But more people watched it?
Yeah, more people watched it.
And didn't like it.
It's fucked up. That's fucked up.
That's fucked up.
I don't think I click like on Top Cappy, but you know.
Well, I don't click like on movies on Letterboxd like that. Maybe everyone that's watched it was just like me and was just rating it 5 stars and moving on.
Here we
on.
Go. Hilver has anticipated this. Films with the most likes per view. Top 3.
Okay. Likes per view ratio.
Well, Everything You Roll at Once.
Yep.
There's got to be one.
It's like over half. It's like over half. You out of your mind.
It is over half. But I'm like, surely a movie was like less likes. I mean, they still have to get up to 1.3 million. Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably Everything All at Once. There's probably some other really normie popular ones.
Lawrence of Arabia.
I'd say F a Fake.
Okay.
I think F a Fake is the kind of movie that like if you're watching it, you're liking it, and you're reviewing it well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I'm willing to go with that.
Citizen Kane.
Nah, too many normal people saying that and being like, oh, it's boring.
Oh, I guess.
The answers are Everything Ever All at Once at 51%. At 48%, His Motorbike Her Island, film Twitter Darling. And at number three, at 44%, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I did not. I wasn't right about FFA, but I would like to shift some of my credit into getting a film Twittery type online movie.
Yes.
Yes.
You, of all of us, you understand film Twitter the most. Congratulations.
Oh, you don't want to fucking parry me like that. Hit me without the carry counter over here.
Films with the fewest likes per view. Lowest three.
I bet Torque is in there.
I bet Torque is in there also.
Probably Torque is in there. Good Night and Good Luck, maybe? That's like seems like a movie that people saw in the 2000s and thought was okay.
I like that, yeah.
Okay, so fewest likes per view. And then what was the movie with the fewest likes already?
The fewest likes total was Top Cappy.
Okay, that's my third guess.
Okay. I just think it's going to be movies that more people have seen. That are kind of widely derided.
I think it's going to be movies that more people have seen. Like Eyes Wide Shut, maybe?
Ooh, that's not a bad one.
That's a good guess.
All right, I'm going to expose...
Neon Demon. I don't know.
At 11%, Torque. At 15%, The Madness of King George.
Man, that movie's good. What's wrong with people?
At 16%, Good Night and Good Luck.
Oh.
Top Cappy is number four. Fourth bonus one was 17%.
I feel pretty good about getting Good Night and Good Luck there.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 absolutely. You did. Number of films in the Letterboxd top 250.
15.
Ooh.
I bet it's more than that.
Wow. The Letterboxd top 250 is like miserable, is the thing.
What? Give me a typical Letterboxd 250 film.
Well, reveal the answer, then I will just briefly end this podcast by telling Destiny about the Letterboxd 250.
The answer is 19. Destiny was pretty clear. Whoever said 15 was a pretty clear.
I said 15.
Is that Destiny or
Jack? I said higher than 15, but I wasn't going to guess. I didn't have a number.
So the Letterboxd 250 went through like a rebalance lately, like recently.
Oh, did it? Okay.
To like get Across the Spider-Verse from number one. And okay. There was like discourse about how it was like erasing whatever, and it became much more like normie as a list. Or anyway, but here's the top 10. Number one, Harakiri. Number two, Come and See. Number three, 12 Angry Men. Number four, Seven Samurai. Number five, Godfather Part Two. Number six, High and Low. Number seven, Parasite. Number eight, The Godfather. Number nine, The Human Condition Part Three. Number 10, The Shawshank Redemption.
So these are truly the most boring top 10 you could possibly make.
I love the Shawshank Redemption, but come on.
The difference between the Letterboxd 250 and the IMDb 250 is truly how many weebs are on the website.
Yes.
Because, like, the massive shift in, like, Japanese movies on the Letterboxd one is so funny to me. Like, all it's the entire Human Condition trilogy is up in the top 50, which was something I almost did before I realized how popular it was. I was like, oh, so I'm like, no longer getting cool points for doing it, I guess. I should watch it one day, though. I'll probably like it.
Dune is number 21.
What?
Dune Part 2. That's Dune Part 2 is number 21 currently on this list.
I feel like there should be a 3-month grace period.
Yeah.
Just to like sort out
The Dark Knight is number 24, right above End of Evangelion.
Oh
so,
my god.
Right above Spirited Away, which is right above There Will Be Blood. So fucking end all cinema.
Are you about to turn? Are you becoming an animation isn't cinema guy in real time right now as you watch this? As you look at this list?
I don't believe that, but I do believe that the people who are like fucking Evangelion and Miyazaki coded don't have rights. Correct.
End of Eva is not the top 25 best movie of anything. I like
top 25 best movies people are annoying about on Twitter.
You know, that's not dissimilar to what this list actually is.
Yeah.
But that's just
was that the end.
Yeah, that's
the that end was the end. End that was content. The end of the thing.
That was so fun.
Yes, thank you, Hover, for you writing so that in. As we begin our second century, Destiny, what are we watching?
We are watching. Hold on, let me pull up the stats the info. Please vamp.
Okay. Destiny's deciding what we watch next, but apparently forgot to do this, so well, I'm vamping
I
poorly.
I didn't forget. We're watching Sullivan's Travels. I just don't remember who directed it. Preston Sturges? I don't know what that is.
What's Sullivan's Travels?
It's an old black and white film.
Sullivan's Travels is a 1941 American comedy film written and directed by Preston Sturges. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're watching next. So okay. I don't know where it is. I don't know how you can get it, but you should so we can talk about it.
Okay.
I'll have to we'll find it happen. Somehow.
It has this amazing poster. Holy shit. All right, Dusty, where can people find you online?
At Fridge Buzz Now, most places. And my other podcast, Badland Girls, is at abnormalmapping.com/badlandgirls.
Jackson.
You can find me at Headfalls Off on twitter.com and find the podcast we do at abnormalmapping.com.
You can find me at Twitter, @em_being. You can find, if you'd like to support our show, you can do that at patreon.com/normalmapping. For $1, you get The Great Gundam Project. For $5, you get Blockbusters, which is about to do a Stargate episode next week or two. And for $10, you get VoIP Life, where we talk about some stupid bullshit. There have been many movie episodes of VoIP Life. Listen to me on Around the Long Fire if you would like other movie takes sometimes, because it's me and Neve from Ornate Stairwells, my favorite podcast. I'm on record, so I have to keep reinforcing that for Neve's sake, talking sometimes about movies. So,
yeah.
That's everything. We'll be back next time with a movie. We'll be back every 2 weeks with a movie, hopefully.
200 episodes. Until next time, let's go.
Movies.
Now more than ever.
Don't expect to like them.